recently had the pleasure of interviewing Kathy Marr, an award-winning folk singer, filk singer, and songwriter. I asked Kathy Marr to explain what filk is.
Filk is fantasy and science fiction folk music, or anything that a filker sings, or anything that gets sung at a filk sing. It's kind of hard to specifically define. It's the most exciting, fresh live music that I know of, because people are writing it all the time, people are sharing new material all the time. It's everything that I think folk music was in the 60s and ceased to be when Madison Avenue got hold of it, and it became much more commercial and much more controlled and much less vibrant.
How do you see the balance between writing songs and singing songs?
I'm mostly a songwriter. I love singing, but if something happened and I couldn't sing tomorrow, as long as I could still write, and I can't think of anything that would stop me, I would be okay. I'm delighted when people sing my songs, so it's not like I have an ego involvement in being the one singing the songs. I love writing songs, and I love writing filk specifically because these songs are, these audiences are so wonderful. They really listen to the lyrics. They really listen to what you're doing with rhyme. They hear internal rhymes. There's one song I wrote called Starship and Haiku, mm-hmm. and it has two rhyming haiku for the chorus.
That's impressive.
And the filk audience got that. I didn't have to point it out or introduce it saying that so they would notice it. They noticed it on their own.
That sounds really rewarding.
It's not something you get in a coffee house.
Yeah.
It's not something you get in a bar. You're just live music for the movie of their lives.
Background noise.
Yes, you're a background noise, and they really don't listen that closely. And they're in a filk crowd. They listen to everyone closely, the good singers, the not-so-good singers, the not-so-skilled performers. If you go there with your own enthusiasm, there's no voice that's turned away. That's another thing I love about it, because I think there was a time when music was for everybody, what folk music meant to be. And now it's just for the good voices. And in filk, it's not just for the good voices. Granted, you have to listen to some, you know, clinkers occasionally. But people so love sharing. And sometimes some of the not best voices have some of the most gorgeous songs.
We also talked about her influences as a singer and songwriter. Kathy says that she was very influenced by AM radio.
AM radio, it was the three-minute format, three-minute songs. So I tend to write three-minute songs, something that can just take that little chunk of time between the advertisements.
How about folk music?
To the degree that folk music is music of the heart, it's influenced me a lot.
A lot of people have the image of science, and thus of science fiction, as being very cold and heartless.
You know, for the people who love science and love the idea of exploring the universe, it's not a heartless thing at all. And even the stories that are written about it, there's a marvelous story called The Cold Equations, which is all about a girl who stows away on a ship to go to this planet to meet her, to see her brother. But they have just so much fuel. And the pilot figures out to the last second when he has to put her in the airlock and throw her out in order to be able to get the medication he's carrying to this plague-ridden planet without any loss, and lets her talk to her brother and say goodbye just before she dies. It's touching, but it's very much the science. They have just as much fuel. They won't make it if they let her live. She didn't know this when she stowed away. They're all just stuck with those cold equations. And someone has written a song based on it. I don't remember exactly who. I've heard so many songs over the years. It has a lot of heart. And yet it's still very much the science. I think there's a place for both. And I think the more we get into what is happening with science today, the more it is clear that the human heart has as much of an effect on science as science has on the human heart.
That's a really great way to look at it. I'm very influenced by science, I think, and also very, very influenced by the emotional side of life. And I don't, I see where they conflict in the way different people tend to approach things, but I don't see them conflicting, in reality, if that makes sense.
A lot of the people who write science fiction are also scientists, but inevitably, if you read what they write, their work has a lot of deep emotion. Sometimes, occasionally, it predicts a future. Sometimes it just warns against a future. And hopefully we get the lessons and learn it in time to keep going.
Do you have any songs that are warnings?
I do. I have one called, I think I called it No Heroes. We are not the heroes. We're not the white hats. They're not the black. But we're doing things that we can't change. We can't fix it if we let off the bombs.
We are not the heroes. All the words we say can never change it. We are not the heroes. Rewrite history or rearrange it. We are not the white hats. They are not the black. And none of us on either side can save our children on the day that we are attacked. I watch my babies sleeping and they are barely two. They look out on a universe that's magical and new. I sit here and imagine in this smug, heroic nation what my children will look like next year as they die of radiation. We all move our missiles closer to our enemies until we are forced to use computers to decide just when to kill. But computers have no judgment, or no love, or hope, or fear. So mistakes are that much easier. And nightmares cluster near.
I think that's pretty much political. I've done one called Do Something, which is about, we could go into space if we just stopped spending the money. We could have bought our own ship on just what you spend in the bars, is one of the lines.
Oh, that's great.
Government funds won't get us wings if they all get cut to the bone. If we don't write letters and work for those stars, we may live here and die here alone. So that one's called Do Something. And so, if we want space, we have to go for it. But, then I'm also writing things like Dreams, which just says, I was heading out into the stars. I sit on my porch swing and dream for your children. And all I've told you is just one dream more, but dreams have a way of becoming tomorrow too vivid and real for us to ignore. So we can have the stars if we will just keep dreaming and keep moving in that direction. I think, sometimes if what you are as a songwriter, all you can really do is write songs about the things you think matter. There's one I wrote back when the draft was being reinstituted, or they were trying to, called Is This Why We All Went Marching in the Streets? And unfortunately, it's still entirely too true today. War.
Yeah, it's amazing and unfortunate how relevant those kinds of songs still are.
Yeah, I know. it's scary. I had hoped by this time in my life that all of my anti-war songs would be obsolete. Unfortunately, it's not the way.
Yeah.
Keep trying, keep singing.
Any advice, Kathy, for aspiring songwriters?
When I do songwriting seminars, one of the things I'll tell people to do is get a rhyming dictionary, preferably one that has verse forms in the beginning, and just practice writing a lot of verse, even if it's schlock. Even if it's not something you ever keep, because eventually your brain develops a sort of matrix where whenever you're thinking about a subject you want to talk about or sing about, your brain automatically thinks in rhyme. In fact, during this conversation, there have been a couple of times where I stopped myself because what I was going to be saying to you would have come out as a rhyme.
Oh, my goodness. That's
great. It would
have
sounded too precious to be a songwriter and to be doing that. But your brain gets in the habit of thinking in ways that puts the right word on the end to have the most possible rhyme choices if you do it enough. So spending about 6 months just writing junk verse develops that way of thinking in your brain so that it's all set for you. Then whenever you think on a subject, you'll find that you think about it in a way that allows you to come up with rhymes, which I think, you know, is pretty crucial to song. I know there are a lot of songs that just don't even bother with that or settle for near rhymes, but frankly, I think that's a lazy way of behaving as a songwriter.
So rhymes are really important.
I think they are. I don't think it's song if it doesn't have rhyme. And melody. I think both things are important to make it actually song. You know, rap has rhyme. Rap is wonderful poetry much of the time, but I can't really call it song because it doesn't have a tune. It doesn't have a melody. You kind of need both to make it song.
Do you have any favorite rhymes?
Rhymes. I love a lot of E.Y. Harburg's stuff. He's the one who did the music for Wizard of Oz, but he also did lots of other things. God made the world in 6 days flat. On the seventh, he said, I'll rest. So he let the thing into orbit swing to give it a dry run test. A million years or so went by when he looked at the whirling blob. His spirits fell as he said, oh, well, it was only a six-day job.
That's great. Wow.
Yeah.
I love the gems that, you know, that tell a story and succinctly and then and in,
yes.
You know, in this, you know, in rhythm or in rhyme.
Dorothy Parker,
and so on.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Same kind of thing.
Yeah.
I also like the ones that tell great stories. Robert Service wrote some wonderful things that are way too long to turn into a song. I think a song has to be what you can fit on one page. Otherwise, you know, it's a pizza song.
A pizza song?
Yeah, a song that when it starts, you can go out for a pizza and eat the pizza there and come back and it will just be finishing.
Oh, no.
That's what they call them in filk.
Okay.
And mostly it's just really, really long song sung, really, really slow. You tend to try and avoid that if you can. Keep it short and to the point. Or I do, anyway. I prefer that. There are some lovely and wonderful, very long songs. But there are also some long and tedious and boring ballads, even among the child ballads.
Child ballads makes me think about variations of songs. And I wonder, do you ever write multiple variations of a song and then see which one you prefer?
One of my really fun sing-alongs, and one that a group called Dandelion Wine covered, is called Drink Up the River. But originally, it had a first verse that was about the letdown reflex.
The letdown reflex.
I was nursing my twins at the time.
Oh, okay.
And
that,
the baby starts to nurse, and the milk suddenly floods down, and they start drinking really, really furiously because it's, you know, they have to keep up with the rush of fluid into their mouths.
Mm-hmm.
And the first verse was about that. And I was talking to Mercedes Lackey and showing her the song, and she said, you know what? Less than half of your audience is going to understand this first verse, you know, because not all women have babies and not all women nurse babies. So a lot of them aren't even going to know what you're talking about in
right.
this first verse. And I said, you're right. And I rewrote the first verse, and I'm much happier with the new version.
I was sitting by a river when the thought occurred to me. There were 100,000 rivers that we never even see. They are the boundaries of all we know, of truth and right and wrong. And I have written some examples for you here within my song. Some are bridged and some are forded. Some are swollen from the rains. Some are the ultimate result of all our joys and all our pains. But when the rivers in your life are full and starting to wash down, you got to drink
And somewhere backed up on a computer is the other version, but it's not around anywhere. Because it just, it was not a working version, really.
Mm-hmm.
I don't consider that anything I've ever written is written in stone. I had one called Calm Down, It's Only Ones and Zeros.
Right.
And if you heard it, it's pretty much talking about, you know, the techie guys and the way they talk. And the second verse had, with firmware, hardware, software, beware, never turn your back, the guy you thought was liveware is another techie hack. But I've changed that. With firmware, hardware, software, beware, listen when they speak, the guy you thought was liveware is another techie geek.
Right. Oh,
and it's a much better line.
Yeah,
but it's something I came up with recently, and it is just a change I've made. I have to remember it when I'm doing it. Still, because it's not second nature. If you come up with something better, you change it.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is ever, no version is ever the final version. There's always weaknesses, things that you think can make it better if you can figure out how to do it better at some future time. So basically, if I've ever written anything, I'm still writing it. There's a song of mine about the Velveteen Rabbit.
Yeah. You have a lot of songs that seem inspired by literature, and that's wonderful.
And that's essentially one of the hallmarks of Filk. A lot of them are inspired by literature or by media, you know, films that you've seen. I wrote one for being John Malkovich. There's a song I wrote called Look Away. It's from the point of view of the guy in the last scene of the movie, where he's inside the little girl and he's saying, look away, look away.
Wow.
As she watches her two moms there,
mm-hmm,
with each other. And it was written from his point of view. I'm the puppet master, always without the strings.
Wow.
There was a scene that wasn't actually in Edward Scissorhands. I have a song called Edward about that, and it's the old woman dancing in the snow. She talks about, you know, sometimes she still goes out and dances in the snow. Edward, I am dancing in your snow, even though you cannot see me tonight. As the light and fragile crystals touch the lines upon my face and melt among the tears, I'm dancing here for you in spite of all my fears. The love has seen me through. I am dancing here for you. So it's, you know, an intense love song. And it all came from waking up out of a dead sleep. I'd fallen asleep with the TV on, and the image of Vincent Price holding the cookie heart in front of the robot. And that cookie heart, that image stuck with me. The second verse starts with, you wore your cookie heart upon your sleeve for me. And then at the end when she says, sometimes I dance in the snow when no one's looking, it captured everything that their love was. I wrote one for Flowers for Algernon, which I think is an extraordinarily well-written story. A lot of things come out of the literature, come out of the films that I see.
And it's really a skill to take a novel or a movie and to turn it into the 2 minute and 55 second music for in between the commercials kind of song. That's not easy.
And I think of it as a skill. C.J. Cherry said that with the ideas I come up with, that I should probably write stories, and she'd be glad to help me get published.
Oh, great.
But I had to try and explain. I'm really, really good at taking a huge novel and turning out 3 minutes on it, but I'm really, really bad at taking a 3 minute idea and padding it out to 50,000 words. It's just not in my nature. I am much better at codifying what I think of as the important point in a story, the important image. Samtao Sucharitkul wrote a lovely, lovely novel called Starship and Haiku, and of course, that's the one that the song has, the rhyming haiku. It's an extraordinary novel. I can definitely suggest it. It's really lovely. You've got the last people on an earth that is slowly dying, trying to send some life to the stars to survive, and the last whales trying to send their kind to the stars as well. The ones that are trying to do this are basically the traitors to their kind, because the people, by and large, are committing suicide, and so are the whales. And throughout it all, there is this image of a perfect tea bowl in a museum that is perfect because of its one flaw. I am the flaw in the tea bowl. I will not dance death. I will not lie down here in peace and release my last breath. my verse, my song, caught what this entire novel was about, same as the T-Bowl did within the novel. At the same time, I think it speaks for all of us to not give up, to not dance deaf, to not fall in despair, to keep on dancing and singing and fighting and trying, no matter how hopeless things seem to be.
Which is a great message for the modern world.
I think so. I think so. I think if there's a message we need, it's that. Yes, be depressed. We all get depressed sometimes, but go on. Tomorrow might be better. It might be different. Reach out one more time. Dance one more dance.
I'm glad that you're out there writing songs that have those kinds of messages embedded in them.
I think that's what I do almost better than anything else. One of my daughters once said, you write such disgustingly uplifting songs.
Disgustingly uplifting?
And I loved that turn of phrase.
Wow.
I really loved that. I don't take anything as sacred, not even my own songwriting.
It's been so good talking to you. Thanks so much for being on the show here at WMUA.
Thank you so much for having me.
We've been talking with singer and songwriter Kathy Marr. We heard parts of two of her songs, No Heroes and Drink Up the River. Both can be found on her CD Plus Ça Change, available from dragonscape.net. Samples of Kathy Marr's most recent CD, My Favorite Sings, can be found online at prometheus-music.com.